James chapter 4, we're going to be looking at verses 11 and 12. James chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. Verse number 11 says, "Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another?" As we've been working our way through the book of James, James has covered a lot of different topics, and now he goes back to a topic that he's touched on many times already in the book. That is the topic of our speech and our tongue and our words. And that's why I put this little acrostic in your bulletin, and I put it up on the wall here for us to look at, that just uses the word think. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? And those are five questions we really need to ask ourselves on a regular basis so that we can guard our speech, so that we don't say things we shouldn't say. Because I know that as I prepared this message, the Lord reminded me of many times that I have failed in this area that James is speaking of. When he says to speak evil one of another, we're going to see that speaking evil isn't just saying, you know, that, you know, calling somebody bad names or saying something really nasty about them, but it's even being critical and saying things that are negative, things that are not necessary. And I struggle with that, and perhaps you do as well. Sometimes we see something we don't like, and so we make our comments about it, and really what we need to do is keep our mouth shut instead of doing that. So James has given us some direction here by the inspiration of the Lord. And this morning as we look at this, I want us to notice three facts about God's command, "Speak not evil," that reveal what it means so that we can apply it to our daily lives. All right, so let's take a look at that this morning. James chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. The first fact that I want us to notice is that the fact is specific. It's specific. Now, it does not forbid discernment or judging sin. All right, so what does he say? He says, "Speak not evil one of another." The first thing that comes to my mind, what does that mean exactly? So let's begin with the negative side, what it doesn't mean. It's not referring to being discerning or judging, making a judgment against sin. God commands us to be discerning between good and evil. We've learned verses about that. Remember there in Ephesians 5:10, it says, "Proving that which is acceptable unto the Lord." We find also in 1 Thessalonians 5:22, "Abstain from all appearance of evil." All right, so God's telling us that we need to make a judgment there. If we see something that appears to be evil, that is not right, we need to abstain from it. We need to say, no, I'm not going to be part of that. And we're to be discerning. We're to prove things. We're to examine them. We're to say, is it right or is it wrong? And the Bible is our standard. We're to go back to the Bible and say, what does God's Word say about this particular subject? And if it's against it, we need to say, no, I'm not going to do that. It reminds me of just this morning I was reading in the book of Daniel. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those three friends of Daniel, were confronted by the king's officers saying, you need to bow down to this idol, and if you don't bow down to the idol, we're going to throw you into the fiery furnace. And what did they say? They stood before the king, who could have easily executed them, and that's what he tried to do. And they said to him, it doesn't matter what you do us. We're not going to bow down to your God, because that is not right. And so he was furiously mad, heats up the fire hotter than ever before, and throws them into the fire. God saw fit to protect them and brought them out. Now that doesn't always happen. Sometimes God allows Christians to die from persecution, and we go through difficult times. But they were determined, we're not going to do it. So they had made a decision. They said, no, bowing down to an idol is not right. We're not going to do it. So they made a judgment there. So they didn't stand up and give a long speech and say, king, you're a wicked, rotten, no good king because you've got this idol out there and we're not going to bow down to your terrible, wicked idol. But they just flat out said, no, we worship God. We're not going to bow down to the idol. If you kill us, kill us. If God protects us, He'll protect us, but we're not going to bow down to the idol. So there was a discernment. And so there is a need in our lives to be discerning. So God's not condemning that. Also, Christians are to comfort fellow Christians confront fellow Christians who sin by following the proper steps that God lays out for us. All right, He lays it out in Matthew chapter 18, verses 15 to 18, and He tells us there what we're to do. He says, moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouths of two or three witnesses every word may be established. Then he goes on and he says that if they neglect to hear them, tell it unto the church. But if they neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. So God says we need to discern here. If someone has done wrong, we need to confront them. Now, how did God say to confront them? By telling everybody else first? No. He says go to them privately, one-on-one. Somebody's done wrong. You know about it. You go to them. And you know, that is hard. It really is. It's hard. Because we don't like to get in somebody's face and say, you know, what you did wasn't right. We don't like that. It's hard. Really hard. But God says that's what we need to do. He says, go confront them one-on-one. And if they'll hear you, you've rescued them and helped them and brought them back to the place of protection and safety. But if they won't hear you, then take two or three more with you so that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, they'll perhaps, he'll listen to you. But if he still doesn't listen, he says, then take it to the church. And if they won't listen then he says you need to treat him like a heathen man and a publican. Now, what's that mean? Well, how do you treat your neighbor? Do you spit at him every time you see him? No. I mean, you're friendly, but you don't fellowship with him. It's not like you have him over and say, all right, come on over, let's have dinner together and have some good fellowship together tonight. No, you don't do that because he says if they are not doing right, you need to treat them like a heathen man and a publican. Now, a publican was the tax collector. They didn't really like the tax collectors, and they didn't sit down and have dinner with the tax collectors. But at the same time, they weren't to call them names and be ungodly toward them. So that's the second way in which we need to be discerning about and judging about sin. Then also, Christians are to meekly restore fellow Christians who fall into sin. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1, we read there, brethren, I beseech you, mark them which... Sorry, I got the wrong verse. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. He said, go to that brother that's fallen into sin and restore them. Help them to see the wrong. Kind of going along with what Matthew said. But get them to do wrong and then restore them. Bring them back. See, God's desire, when a person has done wrong, God's desire is to bring them back to doing right. That's true in our families. When a child does wrong, our goal isn't to kick them out of the family. Our goal is to bring them back to doing right. And in a congregation, it's the same thing. Our goal isn't to get rid of them because they're a troublemaker. Our goal is to get them to do right so that we can have harmony. And so he says, bring them back. But he said, guard yourself during this time so that you don't also be tempted. Help them, but don't get tempted by the same thing. Be careful. The devil's cunning. So there's another example of how we're to be discerning about sin. And then church members are also to identify and separate from those who disobey the Bible and won't do right. All right, there's a time come when somebody says, you know, I've made up my mind, I'm going that direction. If you don't like it, too bad. And we need to say, all right, here's someone who's made a wrong choice, they're going the wrong way, and we can't fellowship with them anymore, we're not going to have any part with what they do anymore, we're to separate from them. Several examples, Romans chapter 16 and verse 17, Paul wrote to the Romans and he said, now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. He said, if they're teaching doctrine that is different than what you find in the scriptures, then you're to mark them and avoid them. Now, that seems harsh sometimes. Sometimes I know some people that are nice people, but their doctrine is wrong. And I can't really fellowship with them. I can be friendly, but we're not going to have them, you know, teaching in our Sunday school. We're not going to have them helping out in ministry because they're teaching in a wrong way. And so if their doctrine is wrong, God says we're to separate from them. Then we find also in 2 Thessalonians 3:6, he says, now we command you, brethren, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, that ye withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly and not after the tradition which he received of us. So he said, if they're walking disorderly, they're not doing what is right, they're teaching things or practicing things that are not biblical, then he says, we're to separate from them. And so there needs to be separation. Titus chapter 3 verse 10 says, a man that is a heretic after the first and second admonition reject. A heretic is one who's teaching something that is not biblical. He says if they won't listen after the first and second admonition, you've gone to them twice, said, please, brother, this isn't right. Don't be teaching that. That's not right. I believe what I believe and leave me alone. All right. He says after the first and second admonition, if they don't do it, he says, You're to reject them, to reject them, turn away from them. Now, biblically confronting sin is not the same as speaking evil of a brother. They're two different things. James here is condemning speaking evil of a brother. That's not what we're talking about here. When you have to stand up and say, all right, this is not right, that man who's preaching wrong, he's teaching wrong things, and when you have to stand up and do that, sometimes it seems harsh and hard, but it's necessary for our protection. And so there is a big difference between speaking evil. Usually the speaking evil is behind their back or in a complaining situation, not necessarily confronting them and trying to help them. Usually it's kind of behind their back. And that's where it goes wrong. And so we need to be careful that we have a duty to be discerning. We have a duty to be identifying harmful activities. We have a duty to identify wrongdoers and stand against them in a loving way. But we have a duty to do that. And we need to remember that if the offender is unwilling, then God commands us to separate for our protection. It's important. You remember in the Old Testament when God told the people of Israel, He said, when you go into the land of Israel and you conquer the land, He says, I want you to get rid of all the people and all of their idols and all of the paganism that was there before. Why? Because God's a big bully? No, because God said, if you don't, you will fall for that stuff they were doing. Now, did the people obey God? Partly, but not completely. And what happened? They did exactly what God said they would do. They fell for it. Went right back into the same idolatry, the same wickedness. And several times God makes the statement later on. He says, you are doing more evil than the people that were here before you. Exactly what God told them would happen if they didn't separate. So separation is for our good. It is for our benefit, even though sometimes it seems harsh. Speaking evil works against restoration. Remember, God wants restoration, and He wants us to restore others to what is right, but separate from what won't turn right, those that won't do right, and it's for our good. But the speaking evil actually works against that. Now, one of the main reasons that Christianity today as a whole has lost its impact in our world is because Christians have failed to biblically confront sin and separate from error. And we got churches all over the world today that call themselves Christian churches, but they are so intermingled with the things of the world that they've lost their effectiveness. And God says that's not right. He says we got to separate from evil, take a stand, even though it seems harsh, even though some people will stomp off and say, I'm not going back there again because they're weird. Well, sometimes that happens. But we've got to take a stand in a right way on what is biblical in order to maintain our purity. And so we need to do that. God's protecting us. Now, so this, we looked at negatively, first of all, what the command does not mean. But when He said there that we are to speak evil of no man, here's what it does say. It does forbid speaking evil against a Christian brother. Now, speaking evil literally means to speak against, to say bad things about another, to slander. Psalm 15:3 calls it backbiting. Solomon calls it tail-bearing in Proverbs 18:8. He says the words of a tail-bearer are as wounds that go down into the innermost parts of the belly. A tail-bearer is somebody who's bearing tails, not T-A-I-L. It's not, you know, the tail of a dog, but a story. They're taking stories around and telling people stories about others. And so God condemns this. And criticizing often falls into the same category as slander or tail-bearing. Really does. And I can see many times when I've struggled with this, and perhaps you have too. We say a critical word about somebody or something that didn't need to be said. It wasn't true. Well, it might have been true, but it wasn't helpful. It certainly wasn't inspiring. Wasn't necessary. It wasn't kind. Right? Sometimes it may be a true thing that we're saying, but even the true things sometimes are not, you know, we need to weigh it out by all these five things about this acrostic think. And it'll help us if we'll avoid that. Now, in the context, James has just addressed the uncontrolled tongue, chapter 3, verses 1 to 12. He talked a long section there about the tongue. And then in chapter 3, 13 to 18, he talks about bitter envy and strife. and how that was fueled by the wisdom of the world. You know, the idea of, I got my rights, I'll do what I want to do, nobody's going to step on me, I'll step on them first. And so there was those bitter envy and strife. And then in chapter 4, the verses 1 to 10, he dealt with fighting to fulfill our selfish lusts. All those desires. I want what I want, and I'll fight to get it. And God says those are all wrong. And now, building on all of that, he comes to this place where he says, all right, no, we need to be very careful not to speak evil one of another, brethren. He's talking to the Christians. Don't speak evil one of another. And be careful about that. You know, political campaigns in recent years, they've gotten so attacking of the other side to try to build themselves up, you know? And they dig up all the dirt they can possibly think of about the other side to make themselves look good. Look at all the dirt they're involved in. I wouldn't do that. And then the other side digs up all the dirt about them and says, well, look at all the dirt they've done. I wouldn't do that. And so they're trying to, what are they trying to do? They're trying to say bad things about other people to make themselves look good. But you know, sometimes we fall into the same category. We do the same thing through slandering and criticizing. And really, I believe that the root of the problem goes back to selfishness. It's all about me. And I wouldn't do that. I'm better than that. I'm nicer than that. Look at what the bad things they've done. And we need to be careful. So it's saying bad things about other people to try to pick ourselves up. And that's not the right thing to do. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse number 28 says, the heart of the righteous studieth the answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. This little acrostic really goes along with Proverbs 15:28, studying the answer. It's thinking before we open our mouths. It's using our thoughts to think, am I doing the right thing? Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Asking ourselves, thinking about it before we speak. And here is the reason I think that James links it to slander and to he links slander to judging. All right, it's when we speak evil of a person, we are really saying, in my opinion, that person is bad or his motives are bad. You know, we sometimes say, you know, I know why they did that. They did that because they just are mean. Well, a statement like that is judging their motives. We don't know their motives. We don't know why they did what they did. And we say things like that based on our opinion and what we've become as a judge. We are saying, I can see, I know their motives. I know what's going on in their heart. They did that because they're just... And we make a judgment based on our own opinion, and therefore we become a judge. And we are not capable of judging a person's motives because we often lack the facts. We don't have all the information. We don't know what's going on in their heart. And sometimes we'll say bad things about somebody else because they did something such, they did something I didn't like, or they did something they shouldn't have done. And maybe it's true. Maybe they shouldn't have done it, but we don't know all the reasons behind it. It doesn't justify if they've done wrong, but at the same time, we need to be careful. If it's not part of our, if it's not our job to say something, we need to keep our mouth shut. Is it necessary? A lot of times it's not necessary. We just say it to voice our opinion or to make ourselves look better because they did something bad. I would never have done that. So it makes me look better because I criticized what they did. So is it necessary? Is it kind? Ask ourselves those questions before we open our mouth. Now, speaking evil is often the cowardly way of dealing with a problem. We see an issue and we know there's something that should be dealt with. Maybe a Christian has done something wrong. The right thing to do is to go to them and talk to them about it. But that's hard. It's hard to go talk to them and say, I'd like to talk to you about this because I think something's not right here. And, you know, they may think, well, who are you to talk? You're no perfect angel either. And, you know, and we get all those kind of thinkings in our mind. And so what do? We say, nah, I don't think I want to do that. So I'll go tell somebody else what they did instead. And we go tell somebody else, did you see what so-and-so did? Wasn't that terrible? Well, did you see that? Think what they did. Look at that. And we say bad things about people and we criticize them instead of dealing with the problem. In Matthew 18, Jesus told us the right way to do it is to go to them one-on-one. If they won't listen, take a friend with you. Go talk to them again. If they won't listen, then go bring it to the church. And so he's dealing with it in a biblical way. That's the right thing to do. Now, speaking the truth in love is what is necessary. It isn't attacking. It isn't being mean. And remember, our goal when we confront someone when they've done wrong, what is our goal supposed to be? Restoration. Our goal isn't to put them down or to make them feel bad or make them, you know, just, you know, feel like they wish they could die. That's not our goal. That shouldn't be our goal. Our goal should be restoration. I want to help them. I want them to get back doing what is right. And so, this is not easy, but it's the right thing. It's what God has commanded us to do instead of slander. God says, I want you to confront someone when they've done wrong. Don't talk behind their back. Go see them. Talk to them about it. Address the problem the right way. So we find, first of all, that the command is very specific. Secondly, we see that the command is serious. It's a serious command. And he goes on in verse number 11. And he says, speak not evil one of another brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother, speaketh evil of the law and judges the law. But if thou be a judge of the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. Well, that's kind of a tongue-twisting, mind-boggling type of a thing there. And I kind of dug around that for a long time trying to figure it all out to make sure I could say it in the right way. But here's what I think he's talking about here. If we slander, we act as a judge. God said, I don't want you to be acting as a judge. That's not your job. You're not to be the judge. And so James points out here that speaking evil and judging are really an attack on God's law. All right? He does not identify any specific law when he mentions this. When he says here, he says speaking evil of the law. Well, what law? Well, he doesn't say specifically. As I searched through the Bible to try to find a law that would deal with this, one of the verses I found was back in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 16. That was part of the law. Remember the books of the law? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. So Leviticus chapter 19 and verse number 16 says, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord. All right, so God says we're not to be a talebearer. We're not to be a talebearer. Perhaps that's what James is referring to. Don't know for sure. He doesn't say. Another thing that he may be referring to is back in chapter 2, just flip a page back, and you see in verse number 10, when he says, whosoever should keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all. And actually up in verse number 8, he says, if ye fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well. So he talks there about the royal law of loving others like you love yourself. So that's a possibility what he had in mind. He could have been referring to the royal law. He could have been referring to the one back in Leviticus, not to slander. I don't know. Either one, it doesn't matter. The point is clear that he says that God has laws about this that we need to be very careful about. God does not want us to slander. You can read through the book of Proverbs. Proverbs deals a lot with our mouth. He talks about slandering, talks about gossip, he talks about all kinds of things with our mouth. And so, again, there's scripture there that'll help us to go in the right direction. And so God has given us a command. Now, when we slander or criticize someone, we are saying things that we are saying that we are right and they are wrong. All right, so we're making a judgment. We're saying I'm right, they're wrong, and what they did wasn't good. And we say blah 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 about them, nasty things about them because we didn't like what they did. Okay, so we've said something we shouldn't say. We've criticized them. We've been slandering them. We've said things about them that wasn't needed. Now, again, he's not talking about fulfilling our duty. He's not talking about confronting a person and saying, listen, we need to have a talk. Something you've done wasn't right. You've offended me, or you've done something that doesn't please the Lord. We need to deal with this. He's not talking about that. All right, so the big thing, if we don't catch anything else this morning, I want us to make sure that we understand that speaking evil is not addressing sin. It is not dealing with a problem the biblical way. It is doing it the wrong way. It is saying bad things behind someone's back about them that is cutting and hurting. Okay, so that's what he's talking about when he's talking about this speaking evil. Now, when we speak evil of others, we are really disobeying the command. God said, don't speak evil. And we do it anyway. We've disobeyed God's command. And when we do so, we speak evil of God's law. We're really saying, God's law forbidding me to speak evil is not right. I know better than what God said. Now, we wouldn't say it that way, but that's what is happening. We're saying, all right, God said I'm not to speak evil of my brother, but I did it anyway. And, you know, and God I know better than you. In this situation, I was right. It was good for me to say that bad thing about them because of what they did to me or whatever. And we're really putting ourselves above God. We're speaking evil of God's law. We're speaking evil of God. And we become a judge. And God says that is wrong. Now, we cannot obey God's law and be a judge at the same time. Or sorry, can't disobey God's law and be the judge. All right, so if we're disobeying the law and we're being a judge, we're not pleasing to God. All right, now if we judge or condemn God's law, we are obviously not obeying it. All right, so if we're judging, condemning what God said, then we're not obeying what God said. And that's basically what James is getting across here. He's saying anytime we set ourselves up as the judge and condemn what God said that we're to do, we're putting down God, we're putting down God's law, and that's a very serious sin. And we should not do that. Warren Wiersbe in his commentary summed all this up, and he said, we never know all the facts in a case. And we certainly never know the motives that are at work in men's hearts. To speak evil of a brother and to judge a brother on the basis of partial evidence and probably unkind motives is to sin against him and against God. And that really sums up what he's talking about here. We need to be very careful about that. Now, the third fact that I want us to notice here, and that is that the condemnation is severe. The condemnation. What does James tell us is the result of this? All right. He tells us in verse number 12, there is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. All right, God is that lawgiver. God's the lawgiver. God's the one that sets the rules. God's the one that sets the law. Now, God has every right to do this, and he's the only one that can truly be fair as a lawgiver. Why? Because God is holy. He never makes a mistake. He's perfect in every way. He's able then to make perfect laws. I'm not able to do that, to make a perfect law, because I'm not perfect. All right, so God's able. So as the lawgiver, when God sits it down and says, all right, here's the law, you're not to slander somebody else. And I disagree with him and I think that I should be able to say something mean about somebody else. God says, no, you're not the lawgiver, I am. I am holy, you're not. Not only that, God is just. In other words, God is always fair and he bases his judgment on truth. God is always just. And his motives are always pure and right. Are your motives always pure and right? Mine aren't. Sometimes I have motives that are selfish. Sometimes my motives are self-seeking, to do what I want. Or sometimes I judge somebody else's motives, and doing so, my motives aren't right. And so we've got to be very careful. God doesn't have that problem because God is absolutely just. God is the creator of all things. Everything belongs to God and he has the right to tell us what to do. He is the judge of all. And he is the creator of all. And therefore God has every right to say, here's the law. I created you. I made the law. I'm in control. It reminds us of what God gave Jeremiah an illustration of the potter. And how the potter was making a pot on the wheel. And it was as he's turning this pot and something goes wrong. And the potter says, oh, it's failed. It isn't what it was supposed to be. And he squashes it down, remolds it, and makes another one. You say, well, what right does he have to do that? Well, he can because he's a potter. He can do what he wants. He's making it. He can make it whatever shape he wants because he's the potter. And so it is with God. God is the potter of our lives. And he can do what he wants. He can set the rules as he wants because he is the creator. He is the sustainer. He is the sovereign of the universe. And he can do what he wants. And so God has the right to do that. Not only that, but God is omniscient. This is something that we're far from. We're not omniscient. God knows all things. Everything is clear to God. There's nothing hid from him. Psalm 44:21 says, shall not God search this out, for he knoweth the secrets of the heart. We read in Hebrews 4:13, neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. He says everything's open to God. He sees it all. Nothing's hidden from God. God sees every single thing. We cannot hide even our secrets from God. And therefore, God is a perfect, righteous lawgiver because he knows everything. He's perfect. holy, He's just, He's the Creator, He has every right to do it, He has all the power to do it. God is the perfect one to make the judgments. We're not. We don't fall into any of those categories. And therefore, God says, it's not our job to make the rules, it's our job to obey the rules. It's our job to do what He says in the Bible, not to make our own rules or to change what He said in the Bible and set up our own rules. And so, therefore, if we do something that is against what God said in the Bible, we are putting ourselves up as a judge and saying, I think I know better than this book, and I think I can do this because I am no better than what this book says. Well, we wouldn't put it in those words, but that's what's happening when we disobey what God said. And James says that's absolutely wrong, and we know that's the wrong, and we need to be very careful about that. Now, God is the only one, James says here, that has the right to save and to destroy. He can save and He can destroy. These words cover a lot of territory, but the idea is that He is the sovereign. He is the one, the sovereign of the universe. He is the one who's created all things. He knows what is right, and no one can tell God what to do. No one can tell God what to do. Again, this morning as I was reading in Daniel, if you haven't read the book of Daniel recently, you need to read it. It's a great book. And Daniel, I think it was chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar tells how he was, well, I'd like to say he was converted to God. I mean, if he wasn't, it sure sounds that way. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon, wicked man, the man who led the armies to destroy Judah. They came over to Israel and they conquered Judah. They tore down the temple. They tore down Jerusalem, burned the city with fire, killed masses of people, and took the rest of them captive to Babylon. He was a powerful man. He was the ruler of the world. And in chapter 4 of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar starts out and he says, let me tell you how I came to know who God is and how that God is the sovereign of the universe. He said, I had this vision. He dreamed about it, that there was this great big huge tree that had all kinds of fruit on it, and the birds and the animals all ate from the fruit of the tree, and everybody depended on the tree. And then something came down from heaven and chopped the tree down and left the roots and the stump there for 7 years. And then when the whole thing was explained to Nebuchadnezzar by Daniel, Daniel said, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, the dream's against you. You're the big tree. Everybody's depending on you. You're a powerful man. But if you don't humble yourself before God, God's going to cut your tree down, and you're going to be a madman for 7 years, eating the grass in the field like the cows. Well, that should have shook up Nebuchadnezzar. Didn't seem to. He went right on doing what he was doing, and sure enough, exactly what God said would happen. God cut this tree down. Nebuchadnezzar went insane for 7 years and ate the grass like a cow. And at the end of 7 years, he gained his senses back, and then he pours out his heart and says, I came to realize, now I'm all paraphrasing this, he says, I came to realize God is the sovereign of the universe. He is the great God. I am nothing. And he humbled himself before God and realized that. So we see here again, God can do what he wants because he is the creator of all things. He is in control of all things. He is the sovereign of the universe. And when he makes a decision, his decisions are always right. When he saves or destroys, he's always right. No one can look at God and say, God, that wasn't fair. You shouldn't have done that. No, God says, listen, I see the beginning and the end. I know all the facts. I know all the motives. I know all the reasons. I know all the secrets. My judgment was fair. My judgment was right. And we can't condemn God for that. We have no right to judge in this way. We do not know all the facts. Only God does. We do not always have the right motives. Only God does. And so James is telling us here, again, let's read these two verses as we conclude. He says, speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another? Right? So here he's again not saying that we shouldn't condemn someone for doing wrong. He's not saying that we shouldn't get after our children when they disobey. He's not saying that we shouldn't confront a Christian that has fallen into sin. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about talking behind their back, stabbing them in the back with our words of gossip and slander and evil speaking and criticizing them instead of dealing with the problem biblically. That is wrong. When we do it the wrong way, we become a judge. We disobey God. God said, don't do it. We do it anyway. We disobey God. God says, you're acting like a judge. You're thinking that you know better than I do. You think you know all the facts. You think that you know about this brother, why he did what he did, and you're condemning him. And instead of confronting him and asking questions and seeking to help him, you're just being critical of him and hurting him and condemning him. God says, that's wrong. You become a judge. I'm the only one that's the lawgiver. I'm the only one that's the judge. And so, as we look at this morning, I've tried to distinguish between our duties as Christians and God's condemnation of speaking evil of other Christians. And our job is always to try to seek restoration. See, restoration helps, and slander hurts. Doesn't do any good. The first is God's way. The second is Satan's way. And many times we follow Satan's way. Remember one of the names given to the devil is the accuser of the brethren. He's a slanderer. He's always talking behind us and saying bad things about us. Sometimes they may be true. Sometimes they're not. Often they probably aren't. But he is accused of the brethren. And when we do that, we are acting like the devil instead of acting like God. God says we need to think before we open our mouths. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? If it's not, we need to keep our mouth shut. I need to keep my mouth shut. And so do you. And so James is reminding us here, speak not evil one of another, brethren. And if we're going to be faithful to what God's taught us in the Word, we need to be careful not to neglect confronting people that need to be confronted, but do it in a biblical way, not behind their back, not stabbing them, not gossiping about them, not speaking evil of them, but doing it biblically. And we practice it in our home. We teach our children to do it in our home. We practice it in our activities, in our work, in everywhere we go. If we would do this, if we would think before we speak, it'd make a huge difference in our lives.